right, all right, all right. Step right up if you dare. You know what time it is. This is the No Chaser Show. I am your co-host, JT. And this is the No Chaser, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, the host with the most, and I know you like to take shots at him, but he stands tall and takes them and pushes them back out at you. We're talking about Matt Williams. Welcome, Mac, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm growing great. It's another week. I feel great. I don't know what to say, man. I'm doing great, really. I really am in my personal life. I'm doing really good. Had a great week at the Goodman. Let me get a few things out the way for the people is TrinityWebSolutions.org, TrinityWebSolutions.org. If you have any needs for online, web, anything at all, storage, anything you need, go to TrinityWebSolutions.org. We'll help you with your presence, with your web presence, from sites to domains to anything you may need, email accounts, whatever it is, we have what you need. So please, if you want to know anything about the products or any of the plans or anything like that, please go over to TrinityWebSolutions.org. All right. We had a guest tonight, which was supposed to be Brian Chase. But Brian informed me yesterday that he may have a game tonight. Here in D.C., it's cloudy and overcast a little bit, but it is, it's been a rainy day here or what have you. So it looks like it's not raining, and I know summer leagues, they're going to, especially if they play outside, they're going to try to give it a go. They're not going to just give up because it's cloudy, even though the Goodman was canceled probably about 2 hours ago. I think Miles just was like, I ain't going to even try it. So with that said, he's not here today, but we will get him rescheduled, hopefully for next week. I do have an open spot next week, so we'll see what happens if that's so. As you all know, I will begin to I will rechange the promo, and we will start promoting that. On August 9th, I know some of you have seen the promos I have. On August 9th, we are going to have the lovely Manisia Leitner. For those who don't know who Manisia Leitner is, Manisia Leitner is a friend of mine. She is on the front cover of two to three to four albums that were done by Prince back in.
Rubbing my hands together and big smile on my face. Talk to me.
Yeah, yeah. 89, and back in 80, back in, shortly after 84, shortly after Purple Rain, a few years after that, mm-hmm. Prince released about three or four albums. I don't know if you know about them, Jerry, but very few very rabid or very hardcore Prince fans know about these albums, and they're called Madhouse, and they were all numbered. They were called, there was like Madhouse 6, then it was Madhouse 8, Madhouse 10, and then there was a 24, but I missed that one. But Manisia Leitner is on the cover, the front cover of all of these albums, and she looks like a 40s pinup girl. Very beautiful.
I'm telling you.
She was 19 years old at the time when she did them. I think if I'm correct, she may correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she was 19, and she even dated Prince at one point in time. So we're going to have her on the show. I asked her to come on. I've been after Manisia to come on the show for probably about 2 months, and I finally got her pinned down. She was like, you know what, August 9th, I'll do it. And so she's going to be on the show. So I would have everybody tune in. She's going to talk about what she's doing now. She's going to talk about maybe I'm going to try to get her to talk about what it was then, how it was, and everything like that. So maybe we'll get to see behind the veil of what it's like to be around Prince and be around him every day. So we'll
and
see.
For those of you, excuse me, Mac, for a minute, because I got to
put
this
problem.
Out.
No, no problem.
I'm looking at 8, 16, and 24 cover. For those of you who want to appreciate what Mac is talking about,
uh-huh.
Google Prince Madhouse, and I guarantee you these album covers will come up, and I would encourage you strongly to listen and enjoy this young lady. I'm telling you. Trust me, guys.
Yeah.
Trust me.
She's beautiful. She is. She's a very beautiful
Trust
woman.
Me.
She's even beautiful now. Even at an older age, she's still stunning. So, you know, she's one of those people like a Halle Berry or a Lena Horne that is growing older very gracefully. and still has her beauty and her looks about her. So please check us out on August 9th. Tune in, and we'll have her here live. Wanted to get to a subject. I kind of put something out this week about Dwight Howard and the Lakers. And Jerry doesn't know about this twist I kind of put on it, but I kind of sat back and I watched it as I do most things, and I don't respond until I think about it for a while and meditate on it, and I thought about it. And some of the people I got, you know, varied opinions or things like that. But I was very shocked and surprised at how venomous and how nasty the players on the Lakers and also their fans were about Dwight Howard's decision. That's a funny word. But I just was really taken aback at how nasty they were about it. And I kind of put on Facebook like, hey, look, you know, I just thought it was funny that Lakers fans and Laker players were saying the things they were saying about Dwight Howard. And my point was, there was two points I wanted to bring out in that. And one of the points I wanted to bring out was, number one, you guys weren't saying this before he made his decision. You guys were all behind him. Oh, man, Dwight. Posters, boards, we want him back, come on back. Mm-hmm. Everybody was excited. Everybody was all gung-ho. Great things to say about the guy. Soon as he says, I'm going to Houston, the venom starts. He's soft, he's this, he's that. What I was most surprised at, and this was what the funny part was, to hear Steve Nash's comments about last year with him was a disaster. Really? That's not what you said hours before about him. You said you wanted him there. So I guess what I'm saying is, how these are the same people. I just want to call out, and one thing I don't like is I don't like hypocrites. I don't like people who do things and then it's different when it's you. You know, these are the same people. Like I said, these are L.A. fans, NBA fans who are screaming bloody murder and all this stuff. These are the same people who looked at the people in Cleveland and said, get over it. LeBron left. Your team was sorry. They weren't good enough. He had to go somewhere else to try to win a championship. He needed help. He wasn't happy there. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But then, it's funny, it's easy to throw rocks at someone else's team when it's not your team and when you're used to having your way. But then when it comes around to you and smacks you, now you're mad. So my two points were just that L.A. fans ought to be ashamed of themselves. And two, what I wrote on my post was, Dwight Howard should, all you're doing is making Dwight Howard feel better about his decision. That's what they're not understanding, because I said in my post, and I don't know if you saw it, I said he was tolerated. He wasn't celebrated. He was tolerated. I said, now what you've done is you've made this guy feel great about, better about his decision, because I'm going to tell you, if I was deciding where I was going to go for my next job, and then all my coworkers say nasty stuff when I choose to go somewhere else, I feel great about my decision. Man, I'm glad I went. Y'all just let me know how you really felt. So you were lying to me the whole time. You really didn't want me there. You just did it because I'm 7 feet and because I gave you a chance to win and there was nobody else. Because I can bet you dollars and donuts, if there was a better seven-footer in the league, they would have went after him and let him go. Anybody
would have gone after him if someone was better. Absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
You really didn't want Dwight. You really wanted him because he was your only option. So when your only option walks out the door, you got pissed off. And you didn't like it because you were rebuffed and told no. And Laker fans are very spoiled. Let's get the truth out there. They're very spoiled and they're used to getting what they want. You know, I'm not surprised.
Well, let me put it. I understand that perspective, what you're saying, and I have I'm partially agreed to what you're saying. But I don't know if you ever listened to there was an interview that Shaq had on. I think it was NBA TV, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I may have it. I may not.
I've seen it.
And what he said was, I'm not talking about the one he was at the race, the car race. I'm talking about this was another one that he said that
he's always said the same thing.
He was saying that when he came to the Lakers with Phil Jackson, He was not a triangle center. So he shaped his game to go along with the type of offense that Phil Jackson had installed in the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he incorporated some of what he does as a center along with what Phil Jackson wanted him to do into the triangle.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I had with Dwight, and one of besides him being, in my opinion, a soft guy, in more ways than one, mentally and physically, that Dwight was rigid in the way he wanted to play. He wasn't looked like he didn't want to buy in completely into the Dan Antonio offense, so he kind of resisted playing in that offense, which was an awkward time for anyone that played in that game. I mean, played in the team.
Right.
So, in my opinion, I didn't think he was going to stay there anyway. I think it was a no brainer.
I didn't think he was going to stay there anyway.
He wasn't comfortable in the offense.
No.
He really wasn't comfortable playing under Kobe because no one plays alongside Kobe. He was playing under Kobe, and he wanted to go to a place that he would pretty much not be.
He wanted to be a teammate. He wanted to be a team.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a teammate, not a subservient.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be an employee. You want to feel like this is your family. You want to feel like you want to be part. No, I'm just saying. Now me putting on my coach's hat, being a head coach and a semi-pro. Guys just want to come and play ball and hang out with the fellas. I mean, how should I say it? In basketball, whether it's semi-pro, summer league, or whatever, you don't want to feel like I got to cater to this guy. Now, some people will do that because
Kobe's team, and Kobe got a bunch of rings. Dwight has zero.
Right. But my only point is, let me make a couple points, because I hear what you're saying. But let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Mike D'Antoni doesn't exactly exude respect when he comes in the door. Let's just take that out of here, okay?
I understand. I know exactly what you're saying.
Right. Okay. That's problem number one with a guy like Dwight Howard. Number two, all the shenanigans and all the struggles they went through weren't off Dwight. A lot of it was off D'Antoni's system, which doesn't have any defense, and it's mostly all offense. And even Kobe had a problem with it. He may not have expressed it as much as he wanted to, because pretty much they couldn't go get rid of the guy. And everybody struggled with it. Nash struggled with it. Kobe struggled with it. Their year, to be honest with you, was horrible. Let's keep it real. Yeah, they made the playoffs.
Sure, absolutely.
But they fell into it, okay? They just tripped and fell into the playoffs. They barely made it. It wasn't like came in like that.
Lakers did not make the playoffs.
Yes, they did. They went out in the first round. Remember?
No. You sure about that?
Yeah, look it up. Look it up and make sure I'm right. But I'm telling you, they made the first round because, remember, Dwight fouled out of the last game.
Oh, yes, that's it. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. It went down to the last day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying to you is I understand what everybody's saying about his mental state or he's soft or this. I have no opinion on that because I don't know a guy's – because he hasn't never shown me something to where I think he's soft or this or that. I've never seen that. I think he's indecisive, okay? I do think that, like Brett Favre was about when his thing. So an indecisive doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad basketball player. But here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is if you look at the whole year in compass with the coach – with everything, the way it was handled, the way everything went on, the injuries and everything else, why would I want to go back to that? I'm just asking that question. Why would I want to go back to a team?
Mac, you don't have an argument
right
with me. I totally agree.
Why would I? So I'm saying to you, I agree with you, but I hear what you're saying. But all I'm saying to you is that I don't blame Dwight for his decision, and I don't blame it on being weak or anything else because I knew he wasn't going to come back. His chance of coming back, I can't say I knew for sure, but I thought his chances were slim and none. They were slim and none when he with when I looked at the whole year encompassed, I was like, why would you want to come when you had? Because let's be honest, the Lakers don't have nothing right now that people hang their hat on and go like, okay, it's cool. Everybody's doing the same thing they always did. All roads lead to Kobe. Kobe is our savior, and Kobe we trust. It's nobody else. Yeah, they're signing this guy and that, a couple guys, but come on, let's be honest. If anybody thinks that the Lakers are going to be a threat to win next year, it's not going to happen. And I know Laker Nation don't like that,
but
that's the reality of it. Show me what you got. You know, my man about to be out. You got Meta World Peace about to go. Dwight's gone. Come on, man. There ain't much there anyway. So what you got is a Kobe coming back who's determined to come back off. You know what it's going to be. It's going to be the same thing. Run and gun, no defense, and all Kobe all the time. 20, 30, 40 points a game. Great. If that's what you want to live on and y'all think that's cool, go ahead. You can have it. But I'm telling you, they're not going to do anything. So what I'm saying to you is I think Dwight made the decision based on the fact of what gave him the best chance to win. And if we look at the Lakers, no matter how much Shaq criticized him, Nash criticized him, all these guys and all these fans did it, it wasn't a place where he was going to win. He wasn't going to win next year. He wasn't going to win the year after that. Kobe's gone probably in 2 years. So what realistic, but then they try to blame that on, well, you know, it could become his team. Maybe he don't want to be the catalyst on that team. Maybe he wants to go, and to me, I think Houston's a great thing. You know why? You got guys who are closer in his age. You got guys who are not 3- and 4-time champions who are going to try to, you know, tell him what to do, and you toe the line, you do this and that. They're going to celebrate him. They're going to like him. And all I said in my thing was, flat out, all the fans and everybody else did with all the criticism is just made Dwight feel better about his decision. And it was stupid because I have to give kudos to Kobe because Kobe handled it better than anybody. He said he did what was best for him, and that's all that matters. And that's how it should have been, professional. I was more bothered about Steve Nash than coming out and saying that the last year with Dwight was a disaster after he didn't get it. And
yeah,
I just
that,
feel
that,
like
that.
I lost a lot of respect for Steve Nash because I figured, come on, dude, keep it professional. Even if you don't think the guy, whatever you think about the guy, that's fine. But stay consistent to what you said. Be professional. But to come out and then criticize him and say that, that's fine. Shaq, I have no problem with what he said about the guy because Shaq has been saying this when Howard was in Orlando. He's always remained consistent with everything he said when he was in Orlando,
exactly.
When he was at the Lakers. I'm good with that. That was straight up, truthful.
Mm-hmm.
That was Shaq. He ain't changed. He ain't Willy Wobble. He ain't Waffle. He did exactly what he said, and I was like, I'm good with that. And so, you know, that was my point on that. As far as the next thing I wanted to talk about is I wanted to talk about I forgot what I was going to talk about. Oh, I know what it was. I was also going to talk about I was going to ask you this. What do you think about the signing of, the breakup of the Boston, and then what do you think about the Brooklyn Nets? I personally think the Brooklyn Nets, it looks like a great team, everything on paper, but to sit and tell me that you're going to challenge the Heat next year, I think that's a little overreach. But, I mean, I think they're a good, solid – they'll be a good, solid team. But, like I said, I don't care what you do and how many people you put on a team. They got to have camaraderie and they got to come together, and that's what the regular season is for. So we'll see. So I just wonder, how did you feel about, you know, that? Because that's pretty much been the biggest deal of the whole, you know, free agency time. So
I have a pretty strong opinion on this. I mean, you get rid of contracts from the Brooklyn Nets, what I understand, that were overburdening your roster – financially, and then you bring in Kevin Garnett,
mm-hmm.
Paul Pierce,
mm-hmm.
Jason Terry. They've all won championships,
mm-hmm.
and they're all, in my opinion, over the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Older players that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that, not to say that they can't contribute in more ways
mm-hmm.
than one, physically and mentally, but they're older players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in my opinion, it's a waste of money to bring in older players like that when you only get 1 or 2 years. And I understand this owner wants to win now. But then, I mean, you bring these guys in for two things. One, for the skill set on the court, and also their mind, their basketball minds,
mm-hmm.
and their heart, because all three of these guys have big hearts when it comes to playing pressure basketball. All three of them,
mm-hmm.
not one, not two, all three of them have been in mm-hmm. pressure situations, championship
mm-hmm.
And playoff wise, and have come through at one point or another in pressure situations, so they know how to handle it. And I think that it's needed on the Brooklyn Nets because, in my opinion, and I've said it before, I think the Brooklyn Nets were a little soft. They had a lot of skilled players, but
right.
when it was pressure time, mm-hmm. Those skilled players, for the most part, kind of shrunk within in themselves instead of pumping their chest out and trying to work
right.
through the pressure.
Right.
So these three players can help in that regard. But I got a problem because they're age. They're old. 35 is Paul Pierce. 37 mm-hmm. is Kevin Garnett. And I'm not exactly sure how old Jason Terry is. He's got to be 34, 33, somewhere around there. These guys are older players.
Yeah, but let me say this. In my just again, putting on my coaching hat.
Mm-hmm.
I like the move from but I understand why they did it. And
mm-hmm.
I think what it is it's the same thing. When you have a guy, when you have guys like Paul Pierce and Garnett, who have experience and are over the hill. They still have something left. They have the grit and the guile to get it in pressure situations, like you said. You were exactly right.
Right.
But you have to remember, it's the same thing in football. You bring in the young quarterback and you put him with the veteran, because the veteran can teach the young guy things that they don't know yet, and say, hey, look, in this situation, here's how you handle this. You know, we've been here before, back in '84 when we did this, and this happened. So I understand why they brought him in, and I think it was a smart move, because what you're doing is you're mixing in experience with youth.
Exactly.
And guess what? Every night it's not on Paul Pierce and it's not on Garnett anymore. It's not on Jason Terry anymore. Now you got young guys who can now take over at the end of games, or they take over at the end of games, but it's not going to be, if Pierce is having an off night, we're going to lose. If Garnett has an off night, we're going to lose. Now you got a mix that now the young guys can learn, and they can take over and they can carry the game. And guess what? At crunch time, here comes Pierce, here comes Garnett, here comes the Jet. You know, that's what you need them for. So I don't think they're everyday, every game players per se. You get what I'm saying? Per se. They have a deep enough bench that they can still, but you can also
mm-hmm.
give them more rest. It's the same thing with the Spurs. If you learn anything from the Spurs this year, they took the perfect mix of guys who were, quote unquote, over the hill and mixed some young talent in there who could carry the game, keep it close. And then at the end, you have the old guys taking over.
Right.
So I think it's the same formula in Brooklyn. Now, will it work? That's a whole different issue. But can it work? Absolutely, it can work. So I understand your point from where you're saying it. But if I were coaching in the semi-pros and I had a guy who was okay, for instance, I have a baby Shaq who's 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is he washed up? Heck no. Can he still get it done? Absolutely. He's still out on tour. He's still doing his thing. He's still doing it. But now the pressure is not, okay, he's our guy, but it's not on him every night to get it done. Now I can
mm-hmm.
put him in a situation where I put a bunch of young athletic guys around him, and guess what? Crunch time, I can get it down to him on down low, and he can put that 6'3", 240 on the guy down there and get those points to close that game out. Or now I got enough guys around him that can keep it close or spread the lead out. Now I can sit him for 5 minutes and bring him back in, and he's fresh. So I guess what I'm saying is it's not all on him. You keep them longer. You can use them longer because now you have youth mixed with age. But it's not those guys who are the, but they're not franchises anymore. But Joe Johnson is, Darren Williams is, you know, and I mean, you know what I'm saying? So now when you mix them with those other young guys, it's just a better situation. But I understand what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. But it all depends on how good Jason Kidd handles this. Or is he New York Knicks? Is it New York Knicks or is it? No.
Jason Kidd was definitely with the Nets, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. But I'm saying,
the rookie coach,
depends,
man.
But it depends on how good he coaches. It depends on what he can get out of them. He has all of the potential, all of the talent to get it done. I'm serious. He does. But it all depends on how do you mesh it together. How does everybody come together? You know, who's willing to sacrifice? Who's willing to say, you know what, it ain't my thing? You know what I'm saying? So, for me, you know, that's what it all depends on. But I just wanted to know your kind of your feelings on it about that.
Yeah, and just like you said near the end of what you your comment about Jason Kidd. I mean, he's a rookie coach with rookie.
Right.
He's rookie. When I say rookie coach, he has no coaching experience. Now he's been a point guard for quite a while. Okay,
right.
One of the premier point guards in the NBA
mm-hmm.
for quite
mm-hmm.
a while. I understand
right.
that. He's the elder statesman of the point guards. There's a lot of respect around the league for Jason Kidd as a player. Now he has to put that into coaching sense and coaching ease. In my opinion, a big leap. He has to put all that. He can't go out there on the court and do
He has to get
players to do what he wants them to do.
That's true. But I will say this. I'll say this for you. But you have to remember, a point guard of his caliber and with his history has already been coaching. Because if anybody knows anything about point guards, great point guards, they are coaches on the floor. They're an extension of the coach on the floor. But don't discount that. Because, and the reason why I say don't discount that is because, no, it's a leap. But I think it's a leap that's realistic with a guy like him. Now, if you were to tell me certain, if you name me certain point guards, I can say, nah, that ain't going to happen. Oh, yeah, no, that ain't going to happen. You know, but remember, point guards are coaches on the floor most of their careers. They're running the offense. They're telling people where to be, where to act. They're the ones who come over and console a guy when I don't like the coach. They're the ones, as well as assistant coaches who are there, who are hearing them, giving them voice, whatever. So I'm saying you're right, it's a big leap. But I think that Jason Kidd has two things going for him. One, he has a championship. Two, he has respect walking in the door. Because nobody who think about it, what can you possibly as a player with those players he has right now, except for probably Pierce, Garnett, and Jet, what player on there can really come back at him and say, you don't know what you're talking about? What guy can come back and say, this is wacky and this is stupid? What guy could come back at Jason Kidd really? I mean, really, and have a conversation like, dude, you don't know what you're doing. I ain't agreeing with this. Nobody.
You're right about that.
So what I'm saying is that's half the battle, and he's already done. He knows what works with this, what works with that, what works with this, what works with that. So all I'm saying to you is I agree with what you're saying. It's a big leap. You're right. But if anybody can do it, I believe he can. I believe that the reason why Michael Jordan and Mike and Magic Johnson failed at their bids is because they were away from the game too long, and then they came back to it. And then I also think it's personality. Jordan is used to being very overbearing and demanding because that's what he was as a player. So when you come back in, you're trying to do it again as a general manager and everything else, and you piss people off. That's why he needed his own team, so he could be a butthole by himself because people had to be subservient to him. I'm just being honest. Magic Johnson.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
and Magic Johnson is too nice. He's too nice. Yeah, he can be mean, but he's too nice, and he wants to get along with everybody. He wants everybody to love Magic. That's why he can't do it. You see what I'm saying? And, you know, Isaiah Thomas, same thing. He's a bit of a butthole, and you know I'm a Detroit fan, and that's my guy. But
right.
he's got a strong of a will. Now, think of the guy who was a success, Bill Laimbeer. The guy you would think that this guy is a butthole. He'll never make it as a coach, and he won two WNBA championships. You want to know why? Because as much as he was a butthole, he coached the way he wanted to be coached. And that's what I think the other guys didn't do. They didn't coach the way they wanted to be coached. They coached the way they thought they were supposed to. That's my opinion.
Okay.
And that rubs people the wrong way. You have to be a people person in order to be a coach. You can't be a butthole and be a coach. You can be stern, you can be fair, you can be staunch, you can be about business. But you don't always have to push it off. You don't have to push it in everybody's face. You have to become a teammate. And I don't mean that in the sense of I come in and say, yeah, man, I'm one of y'all. You know, you don't have to say that, but you want to make them feel like you're on their side, that I'm here with you. I'm in the battle with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, but at the same time, you keep enough distance that you say, I'm not your buddy, and we're going to do what we got to do. But you want to feel close enough that they feel like if I go to war with this guy and I'm in the trenches, this dude is with me. He's not against me. And that's what I think you have to do. And that's the delicate balance. And I think Jason Kidd coming off the court and coming into this now is perfect timing because he hasn't been away too long and then comes back and then this guy's going, what the hell are you talking about? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Right. That's like Bill Russell coming in trying to coach now. It's like, okay, I know you have 11 rings, but what the hell you know about now? Where you been? You know what I'm saying? You got young guys
right.
who really don't know your legacy or your history. Whereas if I just come off the basketball court and I just shown you what I've done, you're going to have a voice. And then guess what? Now when those young guys do come along down the road, and let's say he's somewhere else or in his coaching career, they're going to know because now he's building a resume early so that later on it won't be this, who is Jason Kidd? What is he doing? He's staying relevant. So that's just my opinion on that, and I agree with you. You know, it's going to take – it's a big leap, but I think if anybody can do it, Jason Kidd can.
I just thought about this as we were speaking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not changing my mind about these guys being too old, but I'm putting a positive spin on some of this because these two guys are age veterans. These guys have been in the wars and, mm-hmm. in essence, can help Jason Kidd in his coaching. Because all three of these guys are very coachable players. Not like they're going to fight the coach.
They made sacrifices.
Yes.
Look what they did when they came together. They all made sacrifices.
Right.
You know?
So I understand what you're saying.
And guess what? His coaching job is not going to be that hard. When you got a KG on the floor and a Paul Pierce, Jason Kidd's going to have to coach. But how much easier is my coaching when I got three veterans on the floor who've been there? Done that.
Mm-hmm.
And can come across the guy and say, I understand what you're saying, young fella, but look, you ain't seeing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
I see that. This happened to me. You know, Jason Kidd, this happened to him. Look at this situation. That's why he's telling you. You have
mm-hmm.
to be able to connect. You can't just tell a person, do this. You have to connect them with the why.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of, I've heard a lot of coaches and a lot of managers, even in business, it's like, nobody asked me why, I'm not going to tell. No, sometimes you do have to tell people why. Because it's not that they're fighting you. No, it's not that they're fighting you when they say, well, why. Genuinely, you have to assume that sometimes people just don't know. They don't see A to B. So you have
right.
to show it to them. Go ahead.
And in my opinion, the today's player,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what sport it in, important
mm-hmm.
it's in,
mm-hmm.
needs to know the reason why.
Exactly. Because there's a lot of fundamentals and a lot of things that aren't taught. And
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different coaching styles. You got now, think about it. You got one-on-one trainers. You don't have coaches so much. In between the coaching, when you're in practice, you got trainers who are telling you
right.
something totally different. You know, so when you come together, you have to be prepared to say, this is why I need this done this way. Because then this is going to happen. This is what you got to do, you know, and it's just, so you're right, you know, you have to do it, so, you know, I just wanted to offer that opinion, but I agree with what you're saying, it's not going to be easy, but I just wanted to say, You know, that's what it's, you know, that's the job. But I think it can get done, and I think his job is going to be a whole lot easier with those three guys there. That's what I think. Last thing I want to talk about these last half hour, well, 4:30, whatever it is, 20 minutes, is one of my friends. I give a shout out to him if he's here, if he's listening to the show, is Malcolm Treadway, my man in Steubenville. He asked me, he said, what are your feelings about the Trayvon Martin thing? He said, now that you've seen both sides. And I have many different opinions. Do I, let me say first off and start off first before I start saying this, is that, you know, my heart goes out to the Martin family because I don't care what nobody say. If it was my daughter, if it was anybody, I wouldn't want to see them in a grave. I would want them here, definitely. So I don't want anybody to think I'm cold blooded or mean or nasty or nothing like that. I don't want none of that. Here's what I feel. Do I feel it was self defense? Absolutely. I think it was self defense. I know a lot of African Americans don't believe that. I know a lot of people think that wasn't self defense. But let me give you my point. One, following somebody is not unlawful. There's no law against it. You know, if I'll be honest with you, I live in a place that's, you know, not ghetto. It's nice. But if I saw, you know, four guys walking around my place and they standing around or whatever, I may get suspicious. I've done that before. Now, have I gone out and followed them? No. Why I wouldn't follow them? 9 times out of 10, because I don't need to. I call the police, okay? But following is not, like I said, following is not a crime. You know, and yes, he was told not to. He didn't need to follow. The only thing I have to go on, and this is what I have to go on. The only thing I have to go on is what I saw, which is. Do I believe Zimmerman's portrayal on TV, on his little film or whatever? I believe most of it. Do I believe he was following Trayvon? Yes. Do I believe that he was walking back to his truck and Trayvon happened to come out and holler at him? Sure. But here's my point. Here's the thing I never heard. You heard me say this before. I don't understand. What was, and that's my question, what was Zimmerman to do? He answered his question. He got punched in the face, and I'm just going like, and it's not to say that, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not trying to say nobody deserved it, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, and that's the question I keep asking African Americans, and nobody can answer that question, because everybody keeps saying, he followed him, he shouldn't have followed him, he followed him, he shouldn't have followed him, he followed him, he shouldn't have followed him, unless, and I guess what I'm getting at is that everybody keeps going back to the follow thing as if that's okay that he punched him in the face and everything that happened. Well, it's his fault because he was following him. But I don't see the point of, I understand, but it's like me right now. If I see four guys outside and I go outside and I start following them, there's repercussions to me following them. But also, there are repercussions to those four guys turning around to me and saying, why are you following us? And they decide to beat the shit out of me. There's repercussions for that. That's a choice they made. Even if they're 17 years old, a year away from being a grown man.
I understand that, but listen to this. Mm-hmm. If you had not followed him in the first place,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. all the other actions that took place after that would not have taken place. If you had pretty much prompted or did something every action has a reaction. If you
mm-hmm.
if your action was to follow this person, and follow him like he was actually doing nothing, but he doing something, but he wasn't doing
mm-hmm.
anything at all, but minding his
mm-hmm.
own business.
Mm-hmm.
If you had done that,
okay.
that reaction wouldn't have taken place in the first place.
And I hear that, but here's what I'm asking you. So what African Americans are saying is that anytime you're followed, whatever happens after that, you're responsible for. That person follows you is responsible.
So wait a minute, the next time
somebody follows me in the mall through a store, I can turn around and beat the shit out of him. Why are you following me? And then punch him in the face.
No.
Okay, so why is that okay?
No, no. Well, listen to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this. He followed him. Now, we don't know what was said because he wasn't on the phone with anybody at the time. So you don't know what was said. You only know.
Okay.
You only heard what was said when he was talking supposedly to the 911 dispatcher. But you don't know what was said before that to prompt him to prompt the kid to come come toward him. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute.
But it doesn't matter what he said because you
sure, absolutely matters.
It absolutely matters.
If he's following him for one, and depending on what he said, and some of the things that were on a 911 call were expletives and non-describable.
Right.
So don't know exactly what he was saying to the kid.
Right.
When he was following before the kid came back toward him.
Okay.
You don't know what prompted the kid to do what he did.
But we also know that George Zimmerman didn't strike him. George Zimmerman didn't attack him.
Oh, you don't know that. You don't know
George
that.
George Zimmerman didn't. Okay, so where
are
his bruises?
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Where are the bruises? I'm asking you. So where are the bruises and where are the bruises on Trayvon? There are none. Everybody looked at his body. Nobody said that. So we know he didn't attack him. He didn't jump on him and physically attack him. So basically what you're telling me is that Trayvon Martin made a decision based off what was off words, what was said. And because he was followed and because that was following him, what you're saying, this is what everybody's saying, and nobody's getting this. Nobody's admitting this. When you say that he was followed and you use that as the excuse for the actions that took place after, which Zimmerman made a choice, Trayvon made a choice, and yet you're saying, but that doesn't matter what Trayvon did. If he hadn't followed him, Trayvon wouldn't have punched him. So what you're saying, think about this. What we're saying as African Americans is that's an excuse, and it's okay because if he hadn't followed him,
no,
that wouldn't happen.
No.
So you're saying, so basically what you're saying is
every action,
steal,
every action is a reaction.
And every
action,
choice, right, every choice that's made has a repercussion.
Yes, and the fact is, if he hadn't followed him, now, and from what I'm reading the dispatchers as we're talking,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying that he ran. So that, apparently he ran after him up to a certain point. Plus, the fact is, he was saying, and it doesn't say exactly what he said. Well, let me put it this way. I know what he said. He said, these blank, blank, blanks always get away. Meaning,
mm-hmm.
this guy had negative
mm-hmm.
connotations to Trayvon right from the get because he was black, and he figured he was doing something because he ran
okay.
from him. Well, if
I
you see
you
a
that.
Strange – wait a minute. If you see a strange guy following you
mm-hmm.
for one thing,
mm-hmm.
and then – you start running, the guy runs after you. I can see what happened, and I can almost visualize what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? This guy approached Trayvon. Trayvon looked at this guy, and for some reason, whatever he was doing caused Trayvon to run.
So you don't believe Trayvon confronted him and said, "Why are you?"
Wait a minute. Let me finish. So Trayvon ran, okay? This guy ran after him, and he was running after him or whatever, he was on the phone talking to a 911 call dispatcher, and they told
mm-hmm.
him you don't need to be following this kid, and I'm just assuming here that George Zimmerman decided not to follow him, regardless of what he was saying and whatever was going on, he decided not to follow him.
Exactly.
Now, wait a minute. Now, for whatever reason, because we don't know what happened, this kid may have come back toward George Zimmerman for whatever reason. I don't know. Because we weren't there.
Let me finish. Okay.
Let me finish. He may come back at him, and you don't know exactly what was said between the two before there supposedly was a physical altercation. You don't know what was said.
You don't know who came at who. You don't know who came at who because you weren't there. You don't know who came at who.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me. Wait a minute. I want to get this straight. So you're telling me they had a scuffle. And Zimmerman gets the worst of it. No bruises on Trayvon. And you're telling me they had a physical scuffle? Really?
Wait a minute.
You're telling me they had a fight.
They had a one-sided fight.
They had a two-way fight.
Wait a minute. Listen to what I'm saying. Listen to what I just said. I said they had a physical altercation, but you don't know who prompted it. You don't know. Because it was dark, there was no eyewitness that saw who came at who first. There was no one that saw
who came at who first. There's one eyewitness who said that Trayvon was on top.
This is the problem I have, Mac. This is the problem I have, and I think you're jumping all over this. Just because he was on top at one instance of this doesn't mean he prompted it or he started it. That doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything. You're right. Here's how I'll sum it up. Because I realize we can go round and round about this. Here's where I am with it.
Mm-hmm.
Black folks, African Americans have their minds made up. They had their minds made up when it happened. They had their minds made up by the media. You guys made up your mind. And it doesn't matter what they showed in court. I've watched this for over a year on Facebook and Twitter. I've watched all of it. I'm watching it right now. The fact of the matter is this, and this is the problem I have with my people, is that we have made up our minds that this is what it is. And no matter what that, let me tell you something, no matter what that evidence was shown in that courtroom, nobody believes it. Nobody, because you've made up your mind. You know that no matter what is said, no matter what is told, no matter what they bring out, you guys, African Americans, are going to find a way,
you're African American, but you're African American, but you believe a different way. Okay?
But you have made your mind up.
You have made your mind up just like you say other black people have made their mind up on the opposite way.
I didn't start posting it. Anybody who wants to go check my page, go check it. I didn't start posting anything about Trayvon Martin. Not one thing. Until the trial started and the evidence started being shown. I didn't wait till the whole thing was over. I did it just like everybody else was reporting what was being said, what I saw on TV. I went by the evidence that was on there. I didn't do this a year from now. I wasn't talking about Trayvon was shot down dead by Zimmerman in cold blood. I never said that. I didn't post anything on it, and I did it on purpose because I kept saying I want to see the whole evidence. I don't want to go by what the media is telling me. I don't want to go by what the people are reporting on Facebook because I want to see the evidence. So I didn't start posting anything about this or have an opinion until this happened.
Yes, but I posed this to you last week, Mac, and I'm going to pose it to you again.
Okay.
When your assumption of what you think happened fit, and it came up in the trial is when you started posting. You had your mind made up. Wait till it fits. What?
But Jerry, it was in court. It was with evidence. That's what you're missing. You're telling me what you're basically saying is you did it when it fit, and I'm saying I did it with the evidence. I didn't do this before.
Wait a minute. You only saw it. See, you didn't wait to the whole trial. You waited to a certain part of the trial.
All I said, I never said, why are you not waiting till the trial is over? I said, wait till the evidence is presented and then have an opinion.
But everybody
was calling it what it was when there was no court case, when there was no showing of evidence in a courtroom. That was my point.
What I said last week, and I'll say it again, when the evidence supported what you were thinking,
is when you started posting. That's
and
what I'm saying.
And when the evidence support and evidence, and you're right, when the evidence, thank you, and you're absolutely right, and I
exactly.
I stand behind
but you were only listening. You were only listening to one particular point.
That's not true.
Wait a minute.
I heard the same stuff y'all did. But the difference you're not understanding what I'm saying, Jerry. I'm not upset or have a problem with people having an opinion now, but most of the people who have an opinion now that I've seen had opinion over a year ago, before the evidence was shown. And you made up your mind. I didn't make my mind up then. I have my suspicions. I have my thoughts on what I thought might have happened, but I refrained and was responsible with my opinions until I saw the evidence. Because I know how it would feel if I went and did the same thing that somebody else did, and I would, like I said, I look at it this way, just so you know, and just so my audience knows. I feel like treat things the way you want to be treated. If I went out here and shot a white guy, I wouldn't want the media and the white people to be sitting up here saying, yeah, he shot that white man down in cold blood. That black guy need to go to jail. He need to be killed. He shot him down like a dog in cold heat. I wouldn't want that. So I would want my day in court and want somebody to look at my evidence instead of trying to crucify me. Now, does that mean that'll happen? No. But the fact of the matter is I'm responsible with mine. So for me, I want to hear the evidence. And it wasn't, and here's the thing, nobody in this world except God knows what I thought, or if I had preconceived notions. I sat and looked at the evidence equally. Do I sit and deny that Judge Zimmerman shot him? Absolutely. Do I deny that maybe he could have pushed him off, or maybe he could have shoved him off, or whatever? Maybe he could have. Maybe he could. But my point is, what I have a problem with in our race is that we have made up our minds. And it didn't matter what they showed in the evidence, because I've seen them show evidence, and I've heard our people say some of the stupidest things about the evidence. And, like, I'm like, okay, but that's the same thing African-Americans are doing. But the difference is that when they hear the evidence, every time that man said, every time the prosecution said something negative about Zimmerman, I see a post from people about, yeah, he said so-and-so. We know what he did. But you never see the other side. I saw both sides. I'm not saying that Trayvon was deserving of dying. That's not what I'm saying. But I just wish we as African Americans would be able to be human enough to say, which I would say, if my daughter died, I would have said, I understand what she did. I'll give you a better example. My mother ever told me this. My mother told me, you end up going to jail, I'm leaving your ass there. If you get caught stealing, your ass is there. I'm not coming to get you. You're going to do that. My mother's the same way today. If I go out here and murder a guy, my mother will be crying and hurt. But you know what my mother tell me? You're going to have to pay the price for what you did. But very few of us do that. We sit around and act like, well, we totally ignore the fact that Trayvon Martin made a choice to punch a guy in the face. It's a fact. He punched him in the face. It's a fact that George Zimmerman did not punch Trayvon in the face and did not beat the hell out of him and did not do that. There's no mark on him. So my thing is, Trayvon made it because he was heated and mad because the guy was following him, and I don't care if he followed him from here to Albuquerque. That's still assault. You can't turn around and punch a guy for following you. It wasn't unlawful. It wasn't wrong. But I just want somebody to say, yeah, George Zimmerman probably shouldn't have shot him. Should he have shot him? I don't know. But what choice did he have? If a guy's on top of him, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to keep it real with you, just like I told everybody and everybody, all my friends, if Trayvon Martin came to me and told me, why you following me, he wouldn't have got a chance to get up in my face and tell me, well, you got a problem now, and punch me in no face, because I'm going to tell you, I would have pulled it out on him and let him have a chance. Look, you got a chance. Either you can roll or you can get one, period. I wouldn't have got my ass whooped. He wouldn't have got on top of me. I know that. But the fact of the matter is, and this is the other fact, if George Zimmerman was the racist guy who wanted to kill him because he profiled and wanted to crack at him because he was black, then he should have shot him when he first saw him, if that was the case. But why didn't he? Why you sit down and get your ass kicked and then you decide to shoot the dude when you threaten? He was getting his ass whooped. And my question is the same as I keep asking. What was Zimmerman supposed to do?
Okay,
after
Mac,
he was on top of him, what was he supposed to do? I'm not talking about following him, not talking about before. What was he supposed to do? Tell me. Somebody tell me.
Mac, I have a call on the line. You want to answer this call or no?
Oh, Lord. Who is it? You know who it is?
I'm not sure. Tell you the truth. I'm really not sure.
Go ahead.
What do you want to do?
No, go ahead. Let him in. We got 5 minutes.
All right.
Go ahead. Let him in.
Call from the 919. Welcome to the No Chasers Show. State your name and tell us what you have to say. Hopefully hopefully whatever. I'm listening. We're listening.
Poof! I'm here. Can't remove me because I'm here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, Mr. Staff SP. Here's what I got to say about the situation.
Oh, boy.
All I'm going to say is this. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. There is no fact or testimony of Trayvon Martin punching first. There is conjecture and speculation and one-sidedness of Trayvon Martin punching him first. There is only, I'd say, about 3 or 4 facts in this case that was presented anyway. One, Zimmerman followed a guy that he found suspicious.
Not unlawful.
I said facts.
Not a law broken.
The individual that was following or getting followed ran. Okay? He ran and both sides can, well, one is a witness that was on the phone and the defendant says he ran, and then he changed it to skip, then he changed it to walk. Then we have the fact that there was an altercation. We have that fact.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the fact and an admission that an individual killed another person.
Mm-hmm.
Those are facts. Mm-hmm. That's not somebody said this, somebody said that, this
mm-hmm.
person did this to me, and this is what I did. That is somebody's opinion or their version of what
there
happened.
There are no facts.
Forensics, ladies and gentlemen, you have now seen what I said.
You guys have made up your mind. You're not open-minded enough to realize, you know what, nobody's open-minded enough to understand, to even think about. Why is nobody open-minded to understand that Trayvon could have punched him in the face? And it could have went down the way he said. But nobody says that. Everybody says, nah, that couldn't happen. He was following him. He deserved what he got. Zimmerman deserved what he got.
Jerry,
he should be paid for it because he followed him.
I'm listening.
Jerry,
did I say that, Jerry?
But
I didn't
know. It doesn't matter.
Max version. No one said it. I said
it
facts.
It doesn't matter.
I said facts. I didn't say what could have happened.
It don't matter.
Let me ask you a question. We don't know.
All right.
So let me ask you a question.
So based on the evidence, should Zimmerman go to jail? Did he shoot him because he profiled him? You tell me.
Again, because the post I put up, I already made my position clear that.
And what is your position?
The gentleman's going to go to jail.
I'm asking you. I'm giving you the response.
Just because it ain't the way you like it, don't mean it's not my response.
No.
What I'm saying
but it's got to be short because I'm getting ready to get off of here,
on,
so I'm trying to get you to get it
post,
short.
On my post, what I said is he probably is not going to get second degree murder, but there is more than enough evidence for manslaughter.
Do you want him to get manslaughter? Do you think he deserves manslaughter?
Do I think he deserves or do I want? There's two different things there.
Both.
Answer both. Do I think he deserves manslaughter? Yes, I think he deserves manslaughter.
Do you want him to get manslaughter?
I mean, I'll say this.
Give me the answer.
I want him to have to pay for the crime. So if manslaughter is the one that he receives, then yes.
Why do you want him to pay for it?
Okay, you want to know why. So here's the backstory behind that. The reason why I say he deserves manslaughter is because I don't think he had the intent on killing anybody that night. He didn't have the intent. Did he demonstrate that he had some ill will? Yes, he did. Whether you or anybody else wants to believe it, and it's hard for me to believe how none of his witnesses, character witnesses, could hear him cursing. None of them. Oh, I can't hear that. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Jerry,
I mean,
you see what I mean? Jerry, do you
but
see what I mean? Do you see how he heard it? Do you see? Wait a minute. You accuse me, Jerry, of seeing things one-sided to where it fits me. But he hasn't said anything about that. He hasn't said none of that. He's only repeating. They're only repeating the facts that they see. See, I'm not. I'm repeating. I know what happened.
That's what they heard, but it's amazing.
But nobody believes the other. Nobody believes anything his witnesses said. Nobody believes what.
He showed he had some malice.
Most African Americans do not
issue for anybody.
Most African Americans do not believe. Do not believe anything that anything that favored Zimmerman. Nobody believed.
Really?
Nobody believed one witness. Nobody believed none of what they said. They didn't. You guys made up your mind.
You decided that this dude did it.
You guys want to fight this man to pay for it because y'all mad because y'all want to make it a race thing like he shot him because he was black.
Well, let me put it this way, Mac. I'm looking at his transcript, and one of the things that he says, then it's got a bunch of symbols. They always get away. So what do you think that one expletive wasn't described? They always get away. You think this
he
guy?
He ain't the only one who said that. When you think somebody's walking around or being a suspicious, four
You're
dudes
right.
in the car. Guess what? Wait a minute, four dudes riding around in the car in my parking lot in my complex. Guess what I'm gonna say? Man, what them niggas doing?
No, I see that.
Niggas always driving around doing stuff. That's what I'm saying. We don't never wanna talk about our shit. We always act like our shit don't stink. Like we can't do that. Like that's crazy to me.
That's not the case. It's not race.
So let me ask you this question. That ain't. But you know what? Sadly for the fact, it may not be that way with you. But there's an undertone. So here's what I'm gonna ask you. So here's what I'm gonna ask you. Okay. Let me ask you this question. Do you have a son?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you had a son.
I've got a couple.
He's 17 years old. He goes out somewhere and he's walking to your complex.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he comes home with grass stains on him and he tells you about this Hispanic guy that was following him. And
probably has grass stains on him.
Just listen to what I'm saying. I'm setting it up the same way. If your son came home and had a tussle with a guy who he said was following him, and let's say for whatever reason, the police brought your son home and said, look, there's an incident, he got in trouble with this guy, they got to fighting, da-da-da-da-da-da. The guy had a gun, but fortunately, you know, we intervened, got him home, whatever. And you found out the story was he was following him. And let's just say you found out your son punched him in the face, beat the shit out of him, banged his head against it, but he came home. And your son told you that he went off and swung off and punched him because he was following him. He was heated about it. Would you or would you not tell your son and get on him about the fact that he should have never done that because he could have gotten killed because you knew that the guy had a gun? Would you do that or not?
Well,
I'm at no. It's a yes or no question.
It's not a yes or no question.
Why is yes?
Tell me that.
Exactly. So here's my point. So wait a minute. Wait. So here's my point. Let me finish my point. So why would you not hold Trayvon Martin partly responsible for the fact that he got shot and killed? Because he made a choice.
Wait a minute. The scenario that you're bringing out, Mac, is What's not to think that Vic's son wouldn't feel threatened by this guy and decided to make the first move versus this other guy making the first move on him?
I understand that
because he felt threatened.
I understand that. Here's the thing. I understand that point. What I'm trying to bring out to you is because last week, Jerry, you said to me that he's a high-strung teenager, and you were basically saying last week he shouldn't have been held responsible because, well, he's just a kid, and they got hormones, and he shouldn't be. He's just a kid. He's 17 years old.
Let me put it this way.
I don't like the fact is this. If I'm gonna be a responsible adult, me, Mac Williams, if I'm gonna be a responsible adult and sit and say that George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, and he got to live with the choice that he made, and whatever that jury comes out with, they should convict. If they convict him, then they convict him. If they let him go, they let him go. But here's my point. But I'm not going to be so African American or so so-called black that I will not say that, you know what? We need to show our kids and our African American kids and young teenagers and young black men to say, you know what? You shouldn't go out there and jump on a guy because he's following you because of some words. You shouldn't go out there because you never know what a guy's intention is or what he has on him. You don't know that because I don't care what nobody says. In the city, to act like our mamas and our daddies and our uncles and our grandfathers, we didn't do some stupid, dumb, crazy crap and go out and do things that were dangerous and crazy. And then you come home and we found, and the mother and father found out about it and told you, are you freaking crazy? Are you effing crazy? You could have got killed. You could have went to jail. You could have got run over. You could have got da-da-da. But you know why they told us that? Because we made it home. But if we hadn't made it, but that doesn't mean that they didn't hold us responsible, because they'll tell you, you know better.
Yes.
You're not supposed to do that. So why is it that we as African-American adults find it so hard to say, you know what? Trayvon made a bad choice. He shouldn't have punched him in the face. If he had walked away, maybe that wouldn't have happened either. Hold him responsible, like you do.
You got a point. You have a point in what you said. However, there's another side to that you're missing. When the kid ran away, he ran away from him. You got to remember.
So what you're telling me is that George Zimmerman ran after him.
What I'm saying is George.
No,
Zimmerman,
I'm asking you
because
you're saying he ran.
So how did they end up fighting if he ran after him? George Zimmerman had a car. George Zimmerman saw him take off.
So we don't believe. He drove his car to a spot. He got out.
He got out. We saw the guy.
Right.
After the police officer said, "We don't need you to do that," and he went toward the direction. Okay,
so we don't believe
where he thought he was.
So wait a minute. So we don't believe anything on the. So we don't believe anything of Zimmerman's reenactment. Is that correct? Let me ask you this. So let's go back to what he said. He said that he went to the back, he said he was going that way. He admits he got out of the truck, he was going up the way. He said he was going toward the building because he said kept asking what street he was on. He said, "I couldn't figure it out, so I was walking straight ahead to see if I could see the address on the house straight ahead." He said they asked him, "Are you following him?" They said, "We don't need you to do that." He said, "Oh, okay." He said he turned around to go back to
the
truck.
In the reenactment, I'm going to stop you right there, homie.
He didn't say that.
In the reenactment, once he gets to the top of the T, look at it again, bro. He says, "Oh, no, back there is when he asked me, was I following him? And then I kept going up here to look for the street sign." So therefore, when he got out the truck, remember, in the reenactment, Dermot at the top of the T, at the top, he says, oh, no, no, back there is when the dispatch asked me was I following him. That's
right.
What he said.
Right.
So, therefore, he kept going.
But he
kept
No, he wasn't. He said, no, in the reenactment, go bring it up. Bring it up, Jerry. Because he said, what he said was he was going toward the house. When the guy said, are you following? He said, yes. He said, I don't need you to do this. He said, oh, okay. And he did keep going. He said, I was going forward to go see if the address was on the house. But then I realized I couldn't see it. I turned around.
Wait a minute.
He said, I turned around to go back. He said, I turned around to go to my truck. He came back the way he had originally came up. And then that's when Trayvon said, hey, and said, why are you following me? And that's when it happened.
Okay,
so what
Matt,
I'm saying, so here's my point.
So my point is, you keep telling me somebody,
if I'm on foot.
If I'm on foot
and George Zimmerman's on foot, I'm running, how can I not get away from you?
God,
I'm asking.
So the only thing you can tell me
is George Zimmerman's following. He ran after him, right?
No, that's not what I said, man. I said, he told the dispatch. He took off running while he was still in his car. Zimmerman said he then drove his car to the clubhouse.
You got two different parts. Here's my part. I'm talking about the part where he... No, you're talking about... I saw the part where he went to the clubhouse with the policeman and said he pulled up in there and drove, and then he pulled out of there, and then he went down the street. I'm talking about Trayvon already running by that time. I understand that. I have no problem with that. That's fine.
So he already ran.
What I'm saying is, so then he rides around the corner, stops the truck, gets out. He's still on the phone with the dispatcher after Trayvon has ran, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then
wait a minute. So Trayvon made a choice to come back out and holler at him. He could have went home, been gone, whatever. He couldn't find. He said he couldn't see. He said he didn't know where he was. He was going to see the address. So Trayvon came back to him and then said, why are you following him? Look at the reenactment.
This is all speculation. This is all speculation because we don't
see,
know.
You don't
but
believe
I,
it. That's,
I
there we go. We're good. We're good now. We're good. We're good, Vic. Because you know why? Because you just
said.
If Zimmerman said he couldn't see anything,
he couldn't see the streets.
You just said
that.
Don't believe it. We're good.
Why couldn't Trayvon not see the addresses? We're good.
You just discounted everything I said when I started to push it. So we're good. You don't believe the whole reenactment. You don't believe what that man said. That's another point.
I didn't say that. That's my case.
But you just said it. What did you just say?
There are parts of it that aren't right. If Zimmerman says he couldn't see stuff, Zimmerman said that. He said, I couldn't see any addresses. I couldn't see streets. So if
Trayvon turned around and said, I turned around to go back to my truck, that's when Trayvon challenged him.
You gave the scenario for George Zimmerman. I'm giving a scenario for Trayvon.
See what I mean? See, so you don't believe that. That's what I'm saying. Just admit it. You don't believe it then. Then why are we? I don't want to keep you talking something you don't believe. You don't believe it then.
That one side. You don't even want to hear the second side or the possibility of a second side.
I just told you what the man said. You said, I asked you. I said, do you believe?
Oh, my God.
I said, you don't believe that? You said, no, you heard it. Now you're saying you don't believe the whole thing.
I said I believe parts of it.
Right, you
that's
only believe the parts that go to your side.
I believe parts of it. I told you, Jay, I told you. I believe that's what I'm saying. Just because I believe the whole thing?
Here's my thing. You might as well believe the whole thing. Man, ain't an African American in this country believe that whole thing. I already know that. I ain't dumb. But what I'm saying to you, Victor, is this, Victor. I'm not going to get sidelined. You just said that I made a point. You are the first African American who has actually said that the man was responsible for, that the boy was responsible for his choices. You did
say that.
You said that was a good point.
I agree with you. So he's not responsible for punching him in the face? I said, if I were a father and my son came back home, you can't say that Trayvon came back home because Trayvon didn't come back home.
That's not the point. You're not understanding what I'm trying to illustrate. Hold on, Vic. You're not understanding what I'm saying. So let me tell you what my point is. Because see, you moved the, you move the goalposts everywhere. So let me make it real simple to you. Let me narrow the goalposts for you. Here's the point. The point is, if you would get on your son and hold him responsible for his choice if he came home, why is it that we as African American men and black Americans, period, can't hold him responsible? We should be able to go and not. I'm sick of people saying he followed Trayvon. So all we're really doing as African Americans is saying it's permissible for anybody to beat the shit out of somebody or to confront him in a physical confrontation because he followed. Okay, then stop saying he followed him. So if he didn't follow him, nothing would have happened. I'm going to sit and say that.
You are absolutely right about people, not just blacks. And you need to stop that because that's not true.
I don't care what you keep saying. Let me say you something. Let me say this to you, Vic. I'm going to make this very clear to you, Vic. Vic, let me tell you something. I didn't grow up and live with fucking white people. I live with black people.
Who cares?
Okay? I'm around black people every day. I'm in the homes of black people. I talk to my friends and my family who are black. I have a right to say what I want to say about my people because they're my people. But I'm not. Do I know the capabilities of white people? Yes, I do. Do I know some can be racist? Yes. Do I know that some of us can be racist? Yes. Do I know that some of us can be foul? Yes. But here's the point. The point is, I'm not going to sit like most African Americans and sit around and talk about our shit in behind closed doors, and then we get out in public, we act like, well, it's not us. We don't do that. That's them. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to call us out on our shit, too, because we need to be called out on our stuff. Because I don't like the fact that we always want to be so clear and tell the other side and point at the white folks and say this, 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 and this, but we don't never acknowledge our stuff. Everything with us is always about, well, you know, it's always economics, it's always lack of education, it's always all of this stuff, and I don't understand that. Like, when do we hold ourselves responsible and our young people and everybody else responsible for the actions that we take? But then when they get killed, then we want to blame somebody else and say, well, if he hadn't been following, do it. No, because I'm going to tell you, if it was my daughter, and I know this for a fact, because I've told my daughter many times about stuff that she did when she was in high school and in school that she shouldn't have done. I remember when the time when she took a lead pencil and stabbed a boy in school. Yeah, my daughter did that. And I told her, you'd have lost your damn mind. How about killed her? Because I told her, I said, because what if that boy had turned around and beat the crap out of you because you did that? You know why? Because I hold mine responsible. And if something had happened to her, guess what I would have said? I would have said it was a tragedy if my daughter died. Yes, I would have cried. Yes, I'd have been hurt. And damn right I've been mad at that white boy. But I would have damn sure never sat up there acting like my daughter didn't do something to provoke it. And I'm sick and tired of us as black people acting like we always act like this is an excuse, like they're not held responsible for anything, because we're all sitting here saying the same stupid, stupid ass line. He followed them.
Where I'm coming from is this, and I'm going to say it as clear as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I am not taking one version of what happened as the gospel.
Side. Yes, we do. We have another side. We have the witnesses for Trayvon. We have the evidence that they have that speaks for Trayvon. Do we have Trayvon here? No, we don't. But there is another side. We just had a two-side.
We don't. That's what I'm trying to tell you. We don't know who hit who.
How do we not know that?
That's the crux of it, right? Is that the crux of the argument?
I'm saying, what are you talking about?
That's the crux of it, though.
Okay, how come you accept the evidence that he shot Trayvon? How come we accept all this evidence about what Zimmerman did and did to Trayvon. But then we sit and say, but this is the classic thing. But then we run to find an excuse. But there's no evidence that he didn't hit Trayvon. Come on, man. This dude went to a medical examiner and then looked at somebody. If that was the case, you telling me people looked at this dude, an autopsy, and you're telling me that there's not one, that you're telling me there's not one shred of evidence that this dude hit him, but you don't want to believe that.
No. I'm glad you said that. Matt, because I'm going to break something down that I did for somebody earlier today because they made a good point. Maybe Trayvon did punch him first. Probably you did. I'm not going to deny it because I don't know. I'm not going to say he did or didn't. I'm going to say that he was obviously hit. But I'm going to pose something to you. Based upon that reenactment and being where Zimmerman said he was, and if you saw the pictures before the EMT straightened his nose or whatever,
mm-hmm.
his nose
mm-hmm.
was pushed toward the left. So
mm-hmm.
if you get punched in the face, either your head's going to go back or it's going to go to the side. Straight on
mm-hmm.
jab is going to knock your head back. A hook
right.
either left or right is going to push your body one way or the other. So
mm-hmm.
if Trayvon Martin, who is left-handed and
mm-hmm.
did, okay, he must have hit him in the face, pushed his nose to the left, to George
mm-hmm.
Zimmerman's left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did Zimmerman stumble to his right past the tree 60 feet in the opposite direction in which he was hit, and then somehow, he stumbles 60 feet the opposite direction, flashlight drops in totally in the opposite direction, one flashlight drops in the totally opposite direction in which he would have been hit. So that
mm-hmm.
part I can believe. That yes, if he hit him, then he probably dropped the flashlight, which was to his left, all the way at one end, and then he somehow, according to Zimmerman, stumbled all the way up 60 feet to his right and fell down. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, and you know boxing just like I do, if a person throws a left cross, a left jab, and your nose gets broken and it gets pushed to your left,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to fall or stumble to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And the flashlight, and that is true. I agree with that 100%.
So you've never seen a boxing match where a guy hits him with a left and he falls to his right. You've never seen that? Or you've never seen a guy hit him and he goes the opposite way when his equilibrium is done? You've never seen it?
I've never seen a dude claim to get his nose broke and, you know, he doesn't go to the side of the force.
So let me ask you a question. So you're telling me, So what you're telling me basically is you're not believing that he got punched by Trayvon Martin?
I didn't say that. I just told you he got punched. I just told you I believe he got punched. I just said
okay.
that. I said, I don't know when he punched him.
Right.
I don't know when he punched him, but he did punch him.
Do you believe he was on top of him and beating the shit out of him? Do you believe he took his head and passed it into the cement?
Listen. I'm going to answer you one at a time. I believe that, and both of them admitted it. Zimmer even admitted it. I believe that both of them were on top at one point in time. Because Zimmer even said that. He said, he was on top, then I was on top. So
mm-hmm.
that isn't even a question to pose because that's what was stated. And the reenactments
mm-hmm.
that show it, it just, I mean, he just said, well, I was here, he was there, then we got here, I don't know how I got on top, but I got on top. I mean,
do you believe Zimmerman was on top when he shot Trayvon?
Based upon the forensics and the weapons specialist, no. I believe that Trayvon was on top when that took place. Because, I mean, again, the defense's pathologist and the state's pathologist, they kind of agreed on the same thing. The state's pathologist never said that Trayvon was on top. I mean, was on the bottom. He never said that. He just said he testified that it was a close proximity shot and that the weapon was pressed against the shirt. That's what he said. Both pathologists, state and defense, said it was pressed against the sweater or the shirt, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they both said, that that nothing was in contact with the boy's shirt. So if it was on top or on bottom, it doesn't matter. The weapon had to be pulled up, and if it's only 3 or 4 inches between them, and both of them suggested that, both pathologists and forensic folks suggested on both sides, that the weapon was 2 to 4 inches. That's your index, your pointer finger plus an inch. Your index finger plus an inch on in between. So that means there was room there, either top or bottom. Now, again, again, the state showed that, okay, well, it was a point-blank range shot, close to the sweater, not on the skin, and that's fine. I understand that. That's what happened. That's evidence, scientifically proven. Got it. Both say that it was an issue of how did Martin touch the weapon, because both prosecution and state witnesses said, well, and even Zimmerman, in his friend's book, Answer the Police, said that his knees, I'm talking about Trayvon, were under his armpits. I don't know if you've ever taken MMA. But being on top is a dominant position. You can also control from the top. So, for instance, if you want to subdue somebody, you can just press on them and lay on them, put your full body weight on their chest.
And
that could have been the case in this situation. I'm not saying
So let me ask you this question. Once he was on top of him, what was Zimmerman to do? Just ask
him. He could have bucked him like MMA people do. He knows how to buck. That's the first thing you learn when you start doing MMA. First thing you learn in MMA.
But these are not MMA. These are not MMA.
I know, but listen to me. What was described was a mounted MMA position, okay? And that's what I'm trying to explain. That
when I've
been certified to level one, I'm not level three, but the first couple things you learn in MMA is positioning, how to get from underneath of somebody,
so you're,
how to achieve a dominant position.
So you're saying that your only answer is to what he should have done was buck him.
Just stay in the car.
So, and in other words, if he felt threatened, he wasn't supposed to do nothing but trying to buck him while he's beating him.
Wait a minute, while he's punching him in the face.
Hold on, while he's punching him in the face and taking his head and slamming it against the cement.
Matt, you asked me what I think Zimmerman should have done, right? Now, you're asking me what he should have done, period, or what he should have done in that situation. Because if you ask me what he should have done, period, is follow the guidelines of his neighborhood watch book, which is stay away, avoid following. That's what he should have done.
But he didn't break any laws. But that's the point. That's
listen,
the suggestion.
I didn't say
that's
he broke any
laws.
You asked me what I thought he should have did.
Right.
And I'm telling you, he should have stuck to the script.
Okay.
He should have stuck to the script. We wouldn't have this. But he didn't. In the situation he was in,
right.
He claimed that Trayvon, first he said Trayvon stole
right.
the weapon.
Right.
And then in the book, which he dictated to his friend, he says Trayvon grabbed the hammer and grabbed the hand part of the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
again, the weapon was on his lower back.
Mm-hmm.
On his lower back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So how many hands does Trayvon have? He's going to cover his nose. Well, my bad. He said he squeezed his nose, and then he said he covered his nose and his mouth.
Right.
So that's one hand. Then he said at the same time, he's slamming him on the concrete with the other hand. And then he also says at that same time, he reaches for the weapon, or he saw the weapon and went for it. So that's three hands there. Now, if you actually need four, because I can't pick you up with one hand and slam your entire body to the concrete or to the ground with a great deal of force because I need my other hand. But Zimmerman says the other hand was squeezing his nose or it was covering his mouth and nose. And then, because the weapon is at the small of my back, on my right side, which is by Trayvon's calf now, by his calf, underneath of George Zimmerman, by the way, he reaches down for it and goes for it. But the only other hands that were free were Zimmerman's. I mean, obviously, he allowed Trayvon to beat the crap out of him and didn't throw his hands, because if both my hands are occupied and yours aren't you going to try to push me off? Aren't you going to try to, like, scoop away or something like that? I mean, I would. But then,
unless somebody's sitting on top of you, you can't move.
No. He was sitting on his stomach, not his arms, his stomach. Okay. Now, he already had dropped one flashlight.
You know what, Vic? If he had fought you, I'd have put my money on you. But everybody ain't you. Everybody ain't as encyclopedia as you about MMA, about fighting, and all these football things. I'm gonna say this to you: Do I believe that he profiled Trayvon Martin? Yes. Do I believe there's anything wrong with that? No. And I told Jerry that. Do I believe there's anything? But there's nothing wrong with that. I profile every day.
I'm just telling you the truth.
We all profile.
Mac, you're right. We all profile, but some
Thank
of us
you.
Take it to
so
the extreme.
So what's wrong? But why is it okay when
some
we do it, but it's not when somebody else does?
That's what I'm saying. Some of us take it to the extreme. He plays Batman. Batman researches his characters or his villains, creates a profile on them, goes out and get them. Okay? There's nothing wrong with profiling a black man,
How did we get from talking about the Trayvon Martin case to talking about Marvel Comics? Like, what are you talking about?
No. You're missing the parallel. People profile every day. Certain people take it to an extent that was taken in this case. There's a certain type of person that takes it to the extent. Like you said, you do it, I do it, Jerry probably does it. But y'all say the same thing about,
what if it wasn't nobody shot nobody? What if it was profiling and they follow you around a store? Or follow you around there? It's the same thing. Y'all all say nobody should follow you. Don't follow me. We get mad about that.
You know what? You're right.
We don't want to be profiled at the airport. We don't want to be profiled. We don't want to be profiled nowhere. We don't.
People do it. You know what? You're absolutely right.
To be honest with you, I want it done. Right. But that's my point. But the thing about it is, if you're not, but like my mother used to say, if you ain't doing nothing, ain't nothing going, what you going to be mad about?
Exactly. You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right on that, Matt.
What I'm saying is, we don't understand that the stuff we post on social media, the stuff we say to each other, say about this case, is dangerous. Because I've heard people literally say, man, somebody followed me, I do the same thing. And I'm sitting there going like, you're an idiot. You guys think, because everybody ain't, because that's what this case should show everybody. If we're responsible African Americans, it should be, we should be mentoring our young black people and showing them how to, instead of everything being a racial thing, it needs to be, how about this? It's a tragedy that Trayvon Martin died. That's why we as young black men need to stop being hot-headed and pissed off about the police stopping you and asking you about your ID. That's why we need to stop being pissed off because somebody's following you through a store. That's why we need to stop being pissed off.
Really?
Hold on.
But police don't follow you through a store.
A clerk follows you through a store. Sometimes a clerk follows you through a store.
There's a difference. If you're in my store, I own that store. But
if you have a clerk that works there for you, would you have them follow them if you couldn't do it and you were suspicious?
In a store. We're not talking about a neighborhood.
But what I'm saying is, you're not getting the parallel of what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the same people who are mad about Trayvon being followed are the same people who are mad about the police stopping them and frisking them. They're the same people who are mad about somebody following them and get just as mad about somebody following them through a store.
I'll tell you this. You're a veteran. I'm a veteran. Jerry's a veteran. Okay.
Right.
I think Jerry did, and I'm not sure if he did or not. When I was deployed in Iraq, there was that whole checking everybody, everything in their own country. They
right.
were, we were trying to protect ourselves from the indigenous people.
Right.
Got it. And we were trying to make sure they weren't trying to kill us. Okay. That was mm-hmm. because we were there as quote unquote guests, as liberators. That might have a whole other topic on that, but that's not it.
I understand.
But my point is, when you in that country,
mm-hmm.
their everyday life before we got there was exactly what you said. There was Kwame and all the Hussein brothers and their policemen following specific people, looking at specific people, only because they could do it. And they lived in fear of the execution in broad daylight with handguns. That's what came out of, okay, the whole police state in Iraq. I don't know, Jerry, the different era. You maybe went to Desert Storm. I don't know. I'm not getting into that. But from my experience, the police state where people were forced to deal with anybody and everybody of an authoritative figure following their every move, checking in on them when they wanted to, so it suppressed those people.
I understand
now,
that.
And you know, that's your feeling, that is your belief. For me,
if
for
it
me,
keeps me protected, if it keeps me protected from the bad people, guess what? Fine. If they ain't bad people and you check them out, great. I don't have a problem with that. My thing is, what I'm
thing,
saying,
man,
I'm not talking about military.
Me.
What I'm saying
to
you is that
you stop me on the street, right? You stop me on the street, you check me, and I'm good to go. But I go 10 feet down the road or 10 miles down the road, then the next cop does the same thing. I mean, does that make sense? Because you checked me, you ran my paperwork, you saw that
right.
I was good to go.
Right. Right?
But 10 miles down the road,
right.
10 miles down the road,
right.
I get stopped again, and the same thing happens. And you're telling me there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Because I don't know if they communicate or they don't. The fact of the matter is, But I'm saying, Jerry, why is that
I'm
hard?
True.
But here's the thing. It's just like for instance, I'll give you a for instance. I know, Jerry's done. But here's my for instance. My for instance is this. What I'm saying is, if that happens to you, then you may have a right to ask a question about that. I don't have a problem with asking questions. I don't have a problem with you coming to a cop and saying, hey, look, your guy down the way about 10 miles down or whatever it is told me I was good. Why am I being searched again? I'm not against asking questions. That's not what I'm saying. We're at the subject again. What I'm trying to say.
That happened to me here in California.
I understand
that.
I understand that.
That happened to me 2 weeks ago.
You know why I wouldn't trip about it? You want to know why I wouldn't trip about it? I'm going to tell you why I wouldn't trip about it. Because, see, the difference between most people and me is I always try to give benefit of the doubt or figure out, you know what, is it a chance that could happen? I don't know. But that's just the way
I
was taught.
For real?
That's the way I was taught.
Listen to me.
Now, I'll be honest with you. At the age I am now, I probably would ask a question. Like, I probably would have said to the guy, you know, your man down the, you know, the cop down the way just got my paperwork. I'm good. Why am I being stopped again? I mean, do you guys communicate or whatever? I would probably do that. So I'm not going to sit and tell you that's not something that I wouldn't question or ask about. But at the same time, I guess you guys are really good at getting me off my subject. That wasn't the subject I was talking about. What I'm trying to say to you, I'm leaving that alone. Look, what I'm saying to you is what we're doing and the things that we're saying in this case are dangerous.
And a lot of people
are pushing it and saying it, and I'm sitting here going like, no, we gotta stop acting like our shit don't stink. We gotta act like, man, we gotta stand up and say, no, that's not right. But nobody wants to say it because, and this is just my assessment, is that if you stand up and say it, it's just like me being a black and being a Republican and a conservative. It's like, oh my God, you're the filth of the earth. I mean, that, and a lot of people can't handle that. A lot of people are scared of that, and they go, well, I don't want nobody not liking me, and I don't want people saying I'm Uncle Tom and this and that, so I better go along and get along. So I'm going to say everything everybody else say and just get along. I just keep everything secret. And I'm just saying that's what I think. But what I'm saying to you is that I'm just saying that we need to, if we're going to hold a man accountable for shooting a 17-year-old, we need to be honest enough to say that the 17-year-old should have never done what he should have never put his hands on him. Yes, maybe you could say he shouldn't have followed him, but following does not. There is no reason that a following. It's like when I punch somebody in the face because they told me said something about my mother. My mother asked me when I came home after she beat my ass. She said to me, am I a monkey? No. So why would you put your hands on him for his words? You know, and that was when I got my first taste of, if somebody put their hands on you, fine. Don't you ever hit another man, another person because of their words. You walk away. My mother taught me that. And that's why I didn't have a lot of fights, because I knew how to say stuff out of my mouth to make a person feel little. I didn't have to go fight all the time. You see what I'm saying? When I did, I did. But what I'm trying to say to you guys is that we're not teaching our young black males and our young black people to handle things a different way. Instead of with violence and punching somebody in the face because you're following somebody, I don't have a problem with him turning around and asking, why are you following me? I don't even have a problem with him calling him a name or whatever. But at the same time, he had the choice to walk away. He ran.
And Jerry had the choice of saying, I'm part of the neighborhood. Why?
Absolutely. And I have no problem with that. But what you're saying is not what's being said by the big portion of our community. It's being said that, well, he followed him. And everybody's making that as the excuse to excuse Trayvon from punching dude in the face and doing what he's doing, because everybody keeps saying if he hadn't done it, but it's dangerous, because what you're saying subliminally and what you're saying metaphorically is you're saying if he never followed him, that wouldn't have happened. So that's what he gets. And then at the same time, but nobody's turning around and saying that if Trayvon had walked away, Trayvon might be alive today. But nobody wants
Mac,
to say that.
Mac, you know what? I'm going to say that On both points, you scored. But from there, you have to dissect what you just said, because
mm-hmm.
in both cases, you put the blame on Trayvon. In both
no,
cases,
no, I did not. No,
yes,
I did not.
Did.
I put
yes,
the res- I put the blame on both. No, I did.
No.
When did I say? When did I say that? I just said. Trey, what did you just say to me? You said George Zimmerman
Mac.
Should have said, and I said
Mac.
I agree with that. And then
Mac.
You said,
all I'm saying is
you're not going to twist.
Just,
y'all not going to twist my words and sit and tell me that I'm blaming
okay,
Trayvon.
Okay, I'm not
going to
twist
that's
words.
How you. That's how you feel. I
what
just
you said,
said
what
the
you
person
said,
responsible.
Mac, what you said if black people or our people had teach our kids to just walk away from stuff like that and not be
not over words. What I'm saying is
yeah,
not over words.
Not fight or become aggressive because of words. It'll be okay. It wouldn't happen, right? And then you said if Trayvon had just ran away and went home, it wouldn't happen. In no way, shape, or form did you at all confirm that Zimmerman had anything to do with it. You just said if black people talk their kids,
Jerry,
not to come back
hey
over,
Jerry. Jerry, have I ever said, I want you to be a witness, Jerry, have I ever, in the discussions with you, ever said it wasn't Zimmerman's fault? Did I
no,
ever
you
say
no.
Zimmerman had
I
no responsibility? Did I ever say that? Did I ever
no.
say he had no responsibility?
No.
I'm asking Jerry, did I ever say it was Trayvon's fault? Have I ever said this whole incident happened because Trayvon didn't walk away?
Yeah.
I never said that.
I said no.
But you didn't listen to the show last time, and you have not heard everything that I said to Jerry. When we've had this show last week and this week, and what I said to him was, if you're gonna hold, this is exactly what I said, and Jerry will tell you. I said if you're gonna hold Zimmerman responsible for what he did to Trayvon, then we need to put the same responsibility on Trayvon for not walking away. I never said it was his fault, and I never said that. I never said it subliminally, and you know me. I'm not one for in between, words in between. I say it as I said. I said that. I've never
okay,
said
well,
it was
this.
His fault.
That's the way you said it. I took it. I
right.
took it
that's
as,
your problem.
That's
I didn't
did.
Put it that
so
way.
That's why,
that, right. That's your problem.
I know, but again, Mac, when you say stuff and people take it a certain way,
I can't.
You know,
I can't. That's not my problem.
I know you can't. I got you.
But that's not
I got
my problem,
you.
Though.
I got that. But it's a way people convey messages that make it seem as though
I've been wanting to look for 47 years. I don't care. You know why? You want to know why? You know why? You want to know why I don't care about why people take it? Because I've turned around and I've thought, and one day God told me an amazing fact. You know what the amazing fact was that he told me? Everybody has an opinion about me and shares it openly and shares it completely and says it any way they want. Freedom. That's the American way. So guess what? So I'm going to say it the same way, and how you take it is your problem. I'm going to say it.
That's
God has never
That's
said, in the, and God has never had, there's not one scripture you can show me in the Bible where it says, tell the truth, but make sure you don't hurt nobody's feelings. Make sure you don't make nobody mad.
No. You're absolutely
just
tell
the truth. Tell them white lies and tell them half the truth. Make them feel good.
You tell them the truth, but I'll put it this way. And I'm trying to relate it back to the topic here. You tell the truth as you see it. Right? As you said.
No, I tell the truth as it is.
I'm going back to the case now.
Right.
You tell the truth as you see it. And one person saw it.
And just like all the black, just like African Americans tell it the way they see it.
God, no, listen. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about this case. I ain't talking about all those people that say whatever they say. I'm talking about this case.
Right. You said I say it as I see it, right?
Yeah, and what I'm saying is...
And I said just as other people see it the way they see it.
And I said I'm relating it to the case now.
Right.
Zimmerman, his version of the truth is as he saw it,
mm-hmm.
right?
And
that's the only version that anybody has.
Not true.
So therefore...
Not true.
I didn't say that.
That's not true. We do have another
side. The only person...
Witnesses and a lawyer in a court of law and evidence.
The person in the altercation
mm-hmm.
says that this is the truth as I saw it or it happened.
And the lawyers for the person who's not here
who
have presented the facts and cases the way that they saw it.
And
you're not going. You're not going. You're not
the only
going to put
thing
me in
is,
a box.
I'm not trying to put you in a box. All I'm
okay.
saying, the individual that is alive, told his version several times.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, you got a couple of deviations. Got it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to call him lies because I don't know if he's lying or not. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
say that he caught himself several times when he was being recorded when he said it was him. Then him. I mean, we do it sometimes
mm-hmm.
too. Some people call it Freudian slips. You know,
I don't even think it's
Freudian
slips. I just think if you've been through a traumatic event and you try to go back and remember something, I know if you try to get me to talk about something I did a month ago, I'll be like, I think I did. No, I did do that. And you come back and tell me, I'm like, oh, I did say that? Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what.
So,
I went through a traumatic event a year ago, and I remember exactly how it happened.
Right.
Now, I'm a totally different person than Zimmerman, as
right.
you are of me. But
right.
I remember exactly how it happened because it was that traumatic to me.
Because mm-hmm.
I almost died. I almost
right.
was completely paralyzed.
But
now, I get it. The guy felt
right.
like he was going to die. I mean, if that's the way he felt, nobody, who can say he didn't feel that way? I can't say he didn't
who
feel that way.
Say he didn't feel threatened? That's my point.
I didn't say he didn't feel threatened, guy.
No, I was agreeing with you. I was saying, just like you
okay.
said, I don't understand. I was just giving my opinion. I was like, just like nobody can tell whether he was threatened or not. I was agreeing
Correct.
With you, but I was showing a point.
Nobody can tell that other than him because he was going through it. However,
mm-hmm.
could he have done anything else, right? Now, if we're going to put blame on Trayvon and Zimmerman, how about we put a little blame on Good? How about we
on
put
who?
A little blame on Good, the witness, the eyewitness? He himself, he walked out, told whoever it was on top, let's say Trayvon in this case, to stop, and he didn't see any blows being thrown whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
He just said he saw the guy on top
mm-hmm.
of him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't see if his arms were going up or down or not.
Mm-hmm.
He heard a scream for help.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I'm going to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he goes mm-hmm. in, closes his door, calls the police, then comes back out, but the police are already on their way, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Good had a obligation, just like Zimmerman did, if we're going to go down those lines, to
mm-hmm.
stop the situation. Now, Good did what the book said. Good called the police.
You wait. You're actually telling me. You're actually telling me.
No.
You wait a minute. You're actually telling me that Good should have went out and stopped it. He had an obligation to go out and stop it. So you're telling
what
me.
I'm telling
so
you
just
is,
like wait a minute. So just like all those good old black people in my neighborhood, when Negroes got to fighting and people got out there, got to hollering and cussing and fighting, they should have got off their porch and went out there and broke it up instead of pulling us in the house and closing the door and be like, I ain't getting in there. I ain't gonna be a witness to that. Oh, you talking about that kind of thing?
What?
You want to hold Good responsible for that? Everybody
no.
feel like everybody feel
what
like
I'm saying is, if we're gonna put blame on people, that's what I'm saying. If we're putting blame on people, you know, whether it was Zimmerman, Trayvon, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you had somebody walk out up, go towards it, 18
mm-hmm.
feet, I believe. That's
mm-hmm.
that's what the defense
mm-hmm.
said. 18
mm-hmm.
feet away
mm-hmm.
from it, yell out, stop it. Or whatever, and he said,
mm-hmm.
"I'm gonna call the police."
Well, he did the
you
right
know.
Thing. I don't blame. Why would I blame
exactly.
him for when he went inside and called the police?
Exactly.
Why would I?
Exactly. You're exactly right. He did do the right
I wouldn't
thing.
Blame him for
he,
that. I wouldn't
he,
blame him.
Yeah,
I wouldn't blame him because he got an opportunity. He did what he did.
Matt, you're right. I wouldn't blame him either because he did what he was supposed to do. He went in, he called the police, and he just observed the situation. Now,
right.
He didn't observe the actual shooting, according
but
to
he,
him.
But even if but here's the thing. But even if he did nothing, I still wouldn't blame him.
Oh no,
because that's
I
none
either.
Of his business. He's
I
not the one.
I wouldn't either because all he had to do is what he did, which was call the police and get out of the way.
So why are you saying but, about blaming? Why don't we blame Good?
Well, I was trying to get you to see that if Zimmerman had did what Good did, which is just call the police and get out of the way. Trayvon would have been stopped by the police.
I got that.
He would have been
that.
Questioned by the police.
Absolutely.
And nobody would have done anything.
Absolutely.
But that's my point. I'm agreeing with you.
I'm not.
So,
I don't have a problem with that. But what
no,
I'm saying
I mean,
is that
I'm
if we're going, but I'm saying, but that goes both ways. If
you're
going
you're
to, right. that was my point. If we're going to point all
ways.
This blame at one person, then we need to report the other one because now I wouldn't be the first one to sit here and tell you that I would have blamed Zimmerman all by himself if he had him at gunpoint or something, or he did something to put him in a position where he had no choice, but. From all intents and purposes, Trayvon had a choice. So that's why I'm saying you can't say somebody else has a choice and then not look at him just because he's African American, he's 17 years old, and then act like he didn't have a choice. That was you're giving
right.
me my point. You're making my
you're
point.
Right. You're right. I got a question for you though. I want you to envision this. I want you to envision this too. I'm gonna make it as quick as possible. Okay.
Okay.
You're on your back, and. You're struggling. Somebody's on top of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, if Trayvon was on top, he was leaning forward to the point that his chest was near Zimmerman's chest, or he was leaning forward to the point that Zimmerman, within 4 inches now, four
mm-hmm.
inches, could pull the weapon out
mm-hmm.
from behind his back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, post his elbow, and when you stand your elbow up, your elbow, I mean, some people have long arms, some people don't, but from your elbow to your the tip of your finger, I'd say it's what, about 1.5 feet, so that's 18 inches, right? So you got, and you're right-handed now, you're right-handed, so that means dude's chest is right above your Zimmerman's trigger, or trickling his weapon, is right at Trayvon's chest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would imply that Trayvon was leaning over. If we're going with the scenario that he was on top and he was pounding him and stuff and all that other stuff, and Zimmerman had enough room with a 18-inch elbow to fingertip, so we'll just say 12, 12 inches, right? Because your hand's about your hand ain't a foot long. Let's go 14 inches, right? So 14 inches, you had to squeeze in between a four inch gap and pull the weapon to make sure that it was fired, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know you hit the guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it. I mean, that I can't believe, but we'll say it's true because he said it was true, right? But you got 14 inches here from elbow to your hand, and then let's add another 3 inches for the weapon, because the muzzle of the weapon was on his chest or on the jacket, and you pull the trigger, right? So you're telling me somebody's banging you up and down, somebody's covering your nose and your mouth.
You're trying to put it as if he's saying all this stuff happened at the same time. Like all at once.
The way he described it
in the reenactment, it wasn't like it was like he was doing all this stuff at the same time.
But
he did it.
You're right. Because his initial statement and the statement that he gave to Hannity showed that it was done at the same time. The one look at the interview he did with Hannity. He said, while he was covering my mouth, he was banging me, and then he reached for the gun, but I got his hand in a wrist lock, and I grabbed the gun.
Right.
That's what he did.
Right. Okay.
And that's what he said in Hannity. But then to the police, he said a similar thing, but then on the reenactment, he said a totally different thing. So, which one do you want to believe? You want to believe the one he did for Hannity? You
want
to believe the one he did at the police station? What do you want to believe the one he did it,
in
the reenactment?
Let me make it real simple. I believe it was self-defense. That's just what I believe. Based on what I saw, I believe it was self-defense. I do.
It's 8:56.
Okay. All right, I got you. So, like I said, I'm just telling you, I believe it was self-defense.
Okay.
I do believe what I said is that, what I posted on Facebook is that if he gets, I believe he'll get manslaughter because the jurors don't want no crap. And I think they don't want no crap on this. I think they'll give it to him. Or I think it'll be a hung jury. Either way, it gets them out. It gets them out of it. If they don't agree. It's going to be either a hung jury.
10 to 30
ain't getting
them out, though. 10 to 30 ain't getting them out.
No, you didn't hear what I said. But you're not understanding. The reason they will do it is to get out of it. What I'm saying is they'll make the decision. He goes to jail. They proceed as cool. It's justice. We gone. We're going back home to our lives. We don't have to worry about nobody hunting us down, giving us death threats or nothing like that. Okay. Then either or it's going to be a hung jury, and then it goes, and then Zimmerman walks out. So what I'm saying to you is I'm saying that's what I believe is going to happen. Do I believe he's going to walk out and be free, completely exonerated? Hell no. Hell no. Too much. I don't think them six white women or whoever they are, they're not gonna walk out of there and be like, we did, that's it. Now if it was men, I'd say yeah. Six women, no sir, will not happen. I don't believe it. If it does, I will trip. I'll be surprised, but I don't think.
Why it gotta be conditions, Tom? But hey, that's your thought process.
What are you talking about? Why it's gotta be conditions? I just said. I said why the reason.
I know. I know, Jerry. Go ahead, Jerry. We're going to finish this tomorrow when we do our show.
Jerry, y'all do y'all show tomorrow, y'all can finish and chop it up. I'm done with it. And anyway, I want to thank Victor, my director, for coming on the show. I want to thank Jerry, as always, for his heated discussion.
Both of these guys,
they like me, but they hate me. But I don't care because I love both of them. And I say what I say and I mean what I say. I'm like the distant black cousin from way from El Segundo that don't belong in the family that married in, and, you know, they love me, but I know at times they're like, God dang that black sheep, get rid of that dude. So I know how they feel about me, but genuinely they're good guys, and we spar, we go at it, but I never take it personal. But I just want to say thank you to both of you. Victor, thank you for increasing my time now to almost 2 hours.